Chapter 45. Esther's narrative. Richard very often came to see us while we remained in London, though he soon failed in his letter writing, and with his quick abilities, his good spirits, his good temper, his gaiety and freshness, was always delightful. But though I liked him more and more the better I knew him, I still felt more and more how much it was to be regretted that he had been educated in no habits of application and concentration. The system which had addressed him in exactly the same manner as it had addressed hundreds of other boys, all varying in character and capacity, had enabled him to dash through his tasks, always with fair credit and often with distinction, but in a fitful, dazzling way that had confirmed his reliance on those very qualities in himself which it had been most desirable to direct and train. They were good qualities, without which no high place can be meritoriously won, but like fire and water, though excellent servants, they were very bad masters. If they had been under Richard's direction, they would have been his friends, but Richard being under their direction, they became his enemies. I write down these opinions, not because I believe that this or any other thing was so because I thought so, but only because I did think so, and I want to be quite candid about all I thought and did. These were my thoughts about Richard. I thought I often observed besides how right my guardian was in what he had said, and that the uncertainties and delays of the chancery suit had imparted to his nature something of the careless spirit of a gamester who felt that he was part of a great gaming system. Mr. and Mrs. Bayham Badger coming one afternoon, when my guardian was not at home, in the course of conversation I naturally inquired after Richard. "Why, Mr. Carstone," said Mrs. Badger, "is very well and is, I assure you, a great acquisition to our society. Captain Swasser used to say of me that I was always better than land ahead, and a breeze a storm to the midshipman's mess, when the purser's junk had become as tough as the fore topsail weather earrings. It was his naval way of mentioning generally that I was an acquisition to any society. I may render the same tribute, I am sure, to Mr. Carstone. But you won't think me premature if I mention it?" I said no, as Mrs. Badger's insinuating tone seemed to require such an answer. "Nor Miss Clare?" said Mrs. Bayham Badger sweetly. Ada said no too, and looked uneasy. "Why, you see, my dears," said Mrs. Badger, "you'll excuse me calling you my dears. We entreated Mrs. Badger not to mention it. Because you really are, if I may take the liberty of saying so," pursued Mrs. Badger, "so perfectly charming. You see, my dears, that although I am still young, or Mr. Bayham Badger pays me the compliment of saying so, no, Mr. Badger called out like someone contradicting at a public meeting. Not at all." "Very well," smiled Mrs. Badger, "we will say still young." "Undoubtedly," said Mr. Badger. "My dears, though still young, I have had many opportunities of observing young men. There were many such on board the dear old Crippler, I assure you. After that, when I was with Captain Swasser in the Mediterranean, I embraced every opportunity of knowing and befriending the midshipmen under Captain Swasser's command. You never heard them called the young gentlemen, my dears, and probably one'll not understand allusions to their pipe clay in their weekly accounts, but it is otherwise with me, for blue water has been a second home to me, and I have been quite a sailor. Again, with Professor Dingo. A man of European reputation," murmured Mr. Badger. "When I lost my dear first, and became the wife of my dear second," said Mrs. Badger, speaking of her former husbands, as if they were parts of a charade, "I still enjoyed opportunities of observing youth. The class attendant on Professor Dingo's lectures was a large one, and it became my pride, as the wife of an eminent scientific man seeking herself in science the utmost consolation it could impart, to throw our house open to the students as a kind of scientific exchange. Every Tuesday evening there was lemonade, and a mixed biscuit for all who chose to partake of those refreshments. And there was science to an unlimited extent. Remarkable assemblies those, Miss Summerson," said Mr. Badger reverentially. There must have been great intellectual friction going on there under the auspices of such a man. And now, pursued Mrs. Badger, now that I am the wife of my dear third, Mr. Badger, I still pursue those habits of observation which were formed during the lifetime of Captain Swosser and adapted to new and unexpected purposes during the lifetime of Professor Dingo. I therefore have not come to the consideration of Mr. Carstone as a neophyte. And yet I am very much of the opinion, my dears, that he has not chosen his profession advisedly. Ada looked so very anxious now that I asked Mrs. Badger on what she founded her supposition. My dear Miss Summerson, she replied, on Mr. Carstone's character and conduct. He is of such a very easy disposition, that probably he would never think it worthwhile to mention how he really feels, but he feels languid about the profession. He has not that positive interest in it which makes it his vocation. If he has any decided impression in reference to it, I should say it was that it is a tiresome pursuit. Now, this is not promising. Young men like Mr. Allan Woodcourt, who take it from a strong interest in all that it can do, will find some reward in it through a great deal of work for a very little money, and through years of considerable endurance and disappointment. But I am quite convinced that this would never be the case with Mr. Carstone. Does Mr. Badger think so too? Asked Ada timidly. Why, said Mr. Badger, to tell the truth, Miss Clare, this view of the matter had not occurred to me until Mrs. Badger mentioned it. But when Mrs. Badger put it in that light, I naturally gave great consideration to it, knowing that Mrs. Badger's mind, in addition to its natural advantages, has had the rare advantage of being formed by two such very distinguished, I will even say illustrious, public men as Captain Swosser of the Royal Navy and Professor Dingo. The conclusion at which I have arrived is, in short, is Mrs. Badger's conclusion. It was a maxim of Captain Swosser's, said Mrs. Badger, speaking in his figurative naval manner, that when you make pitch hot, you cannot make it too hot, and that if you only have to swab a plank, you should swab it, as if Davy Jones were after you. It appears to me that this maxim is applicable to the medical as well as to the nautical profession. To all professions, observed Mr. Badger. It was admirably said by Captain Swosser. Beautifully said. People objected to Professor Dingo when we were staying in the north of Devon after our marriage, said Mrs. Badger, that he disfigured some of the houses and other buildings by chipping off fragments of those edifices with his little geological hammer. But the professor replied that he knew of no building save the Temple of Science. The principle is the same, I think. Precisely the same, said Mr. Badger. Finely expressed. The professor made the same remark, Miss Summerson, in his last illness, when, his mind wandering, he insisted on keeping his little hammer under the pillow, and chipping at the countenances of the attendants. The ruling passion. Although we could have dispensed with the length at which Mr. and Mrs. Badger pursued the conversation, we both felt that it was disinterested in them to express the opinion they had communicated to us, and that there was a great probability of its being sound. We agreed to say nothing to Mr. Jarndyce until we had spoken to Richard, and as he was coming next evening, we resolved to have a very serious talk with him. So after he had been a little while with Ada, I went in, and found my darling, as I knew she would be, prepared to consider him thoroughly right in whatever he said. And how do you get on, Richard? Said one. I always sat down on the other side of him. He made quite a sister of me. Oh, well enough, said Richard. He can't say better than that, Esther, can he? Cried my pet triumphantly. I tried to look at my pet in the wisest manner, but of course I couldn't. Well enough? I repeated. Yes, said Richard, well enough. It's rather jog-trotty and humdrum, but it'll do as well as anything else. Oh, my dear Richard, I remonstrated. What's the matter? Said Richard. Do as well as anything else. I don't think there's any harm in that, Dom Durden, said Otto, looking so confidingly at me across him. Because if it will do as well as anything else, it will do very well, I hope. Oh, yes, I hope so, returned Richard, carelessly tossing his hair from his forehead. After all, it may be only a kind of probation till our suit is I forgot though. I am not to mention the suit. Forbidden ground. Oh, yes, it's all right enough. Let us talk about something else. Otto would have done so willingly, and with a full persuasion, that we had brought the question to a most satisfactory state. But I thought it would be useless to stop there, so I began again. No, but Richard, said I, and my dear Otto, consider how important it is to you both, and what a point of honor it is towards your cousin, that you, Richard, should be quite in earnest without any reservation. I think we had better talk about this, really, Otto. It will be too late very soon. Oh, yes. We must talk about it, said Otto. But I think Richard is right. What was the use of my trying to look wise when she was so pretty, and so engaging, and so fond of him? Mr. and Mrs. Badger were here yesterday, Richard, said I, and they seemed disposed to think that you had no great liking for the profession. Did they though? Said Richard. Oh. Well, that rather alters the case, because I had no idea that they thought so, and I should not have liked to disappoint or inconvenience them. The fact is, I don't care much about it. But, oh, it don't matter. It'll do as well as anything else. You hear him, Otto? Said one. The fact is, Richard proceeded, half thoughtfully and half jocosely, it is not quite in my way. I don't take to it. And I get too much of Mrs. Bayham Badger's first and second. I am sure that's very natural, cried Otto, quite delighted. The very thing we both said yesterday, Esther. Then, pursued Richard, it's monotonous, and today is too like yesterday, and tomorrow is too like today. But I am afraid, said I, this is an objection to all kinds of application to life itself, except under some very uncommon circumstances. Do you think so? Returned Richard, still considering. Perhaps. Ha! Why, then, you know, he added, suddenly becoming gay again, we travel outside a circle to what I said just now. It'll do as well as anything else. Oh, it's all right enough. Let us talk about something else. But even Otto, with her loving face, and if it had seemed innocent, untrusting when I first saw it in that memorable November fog, how much more did it seem now, when I knew her innocent and trusting heart, even Otto shook her head at this and looked serious. So I thought it a good opportunity to hint to Richard, that if he were sometimes a little careless of himself, I was very sure he never meant to be careless of Otto, and that it was a part of his affectionate consideration for her, not to slight the importance of a step that might influence both their lives. This made him almost grave. My dear Mother Hubbard, he said, that's the very thing. I have thought of that several times, and have been quite angry with myself for meaning to be so much in earnest, and somehow not exactly being so. I don't know how it is, I seem to want something or other to stand by. Even you have no idea how fond I am of Otto, my darling cousin, I love you so much. Comma, but I don't settle down to constancy in other things. It's such uphill work, and it takes such a time, said Richard with an air of vexation. That may be, I suggested, because you don't like what you have chosen. Poor fellow, said Otto. I am sure I don't wonder at it. No, it was not of the least use my trying to look wise. I tried again, but how could I do it, or how could it have any effect if I could, while Otto rested her clasped hands upon his shoulder, and while he looked at her tender blue eyes, and while they looked at him. You see, my precious girl, said Richard, passing her golden curls through and through his hand, I was a little hasty perhaps, or I misunderstood my own inclinations perhaps. They don't seem to lie in that direction. I couldn't tell till I tried. Now the question is whether it's worth, While to undo all that has been done, it seems like making a great disturbance about nothing particular. My dear Richard, said I, how can you say about nothing particular? I don't mean absolutely that, he returned. I mean that it may be nothing particular, because I may never want it. Both Ada and I urged, in reply, not only that it was decidedly worth while to undo what had been done, but that it must be undone. I then asked Richard whether he had thought of any more congenial pursuit. There, my dear Mrs. Shipton, said Richard, you touch me home. Yes, I have. I have been thinking that the law is the boy for me. The law, repeated Ada as if she were afraid of the name. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.